Committee on Environment and Land Use and open a work session on House Bill 2984. Committee, I've let two individuals who have brief statements to make on this bill come forward. So if they are ready, Don.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau, here today in opposition to House Bill 2984. The bill purports to change the definition of agricultural land for the purpose of land use planning. Farm Bureau policy defines agricultural land for our purposes, and it says that it is land that should be protected under Goal 3, includes all parcels of predominantly tillable land, irrigated land, grazing land, and rangeland necessary to protect the agricultural environment and infrastructure needed for farmers and ranchers to produce food and fiber in an effective manner, and other lands necessary to permit farm practices in the area. Key points there are predominantly tillable land, protecting the infrastructure, and other lands necessary to permit farming in the area. I've handed out written testimony. You can read through that. Let me just conclude with a final paragraph, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, the proposed changes in 2984 rejects each of those three principles that are described in our policy. By protecting only prime, unique Class 1 or Class 2 land, you would be eliminating all of the dry wheat land in Columbia Basin, the apple, cherry, and pear industry in Hood River and Roscoe counties, the dairy industry all up and down the coast, the grass seed industry in the Willamette Valley, the wine grape industry, and the livestock industry in central, eastern, and southern Oregon. I don't think that's what you want to do. In addition, there would be such a weakened agricultural infrastructure that the whole thing would be in danger of collapsing in Oregon. And in addition to that, the remaining farmers who would be along the river bottoms would be about the only thing left, because that's about where all the Class 1 and Class 2 is. They'd have to be using their valuable land for buffers to protect themselves from conflicting uses nearby. So again, Mr. Chairman, Farm Bureau would oppose the passage of House Bill 2984 as drafted.
Thank you, Don. Carrie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Carrie McLaren, staff attorney for 1000 Friends of Oregon. Like the Oregon Farm Bureau, 1000 Friends of Oregon opposes House Bill 2984 because it eliminates at least 75% of the state's agricultural land base. Mr. Schellenberg delineated some of the areas that would be affected by this, so I won't go through them, but I will note that in 1997, 64% of the state's harvested cropland was outside the Willamette Valley, producing over 40% of the state's crop sales. Umatilla County ranks fourth in agricultural sales, $209 million in 2002, and Malheur County is seventh, with $161 million in gross sales in 2002. Eastern Oregon produces a wide variety of crops, including wheat, mint, potatoes, sugar beets, canola, vegetable and flower seeds, apples, cherries, popcorn, the list goes on, including grass seed, etc. Southern Oregon produces pears, wine, grapes, cranberries, and livestock. For example, cattle and calves are Oregon's number two commodity, grossing $423 million in 2001, or 12% of the state's farm sales. No cattle, no rangeland would be protected under House Bill 2984. More than 200 commodities are grown in Oregon, ranging from azaleas to wheat. It's this very diverse agricultural base that helps us weather dips in the agricultural industry. Therefore, 1000 Friends of Oregon would urge you to vote no on House Bill 2984, as it is very much undermines our agricultural land base. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Eric. That's the only testimony we'll take on this bill. The chair apologizes to many as we go through the next 2 weeks because of the accelerated schedule as far as hearing all House bills by next Friday. We have 100-some bills and it's put us in one big crunch. So we're not going to be able to take the time in committee that we would like to do to hear both sides of both issues. So some of these will be moving very quickly, and before each bill, we will let you know what the time limit that we're setting on each one in order to try to achieve our goals of hearing some of these bills. Is there any discussion? First of all, I'll need a motion from Representative Richards. I did already. Didn't I? Okay. Open the work session on House Bill 2984. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2984 be moved out of committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Richardson moves House Bill 2984 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this bill is really whizzing past me, I have to say.
And the chair
probably. I've had a tap-tap hearing and then a work session today, and I have barely reviewed the testimony, but it sounds to me like this is making a very major change in definitions that are going to really affect our agricultural lands, and I am, though maybe I could get more comfortable with this bill over time, I'm very uncomfortable with it from what we've just heard this morning, as well as some of the written testimony, so I will be voting no this morning.
The chair recognizes that and again apologizes to the committee members, because we are going to have to move bills or discuss bills in a very rapid period of time. Any further discussion? Representative Ackerman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I intend also to vote no. I think that this is too much of a departure from current land use situation. I'm not willing to make such a radical change on less than 5 minutes of testimony. I'm also of the opinion that many of the bills that make significant changes in our land use laws and policies should await whether we're going to adopt this land use commission that I know there's a bill floating around on that, and it was up a few days ago. My point is, why are we going to have a land use commission to study land use problems during the interim when we're making all the major decisions now on really what I think is an inadequate record? I am more and more aware of the tension between the development and the real estate community and the farming and the conservation community with respect to the encroachment of agricultural land by urban growth boundaries, and also a bill such as this, which would take a lot of agricultural land use out of the planning process. And once again, that's just too big of a step for me to make on what little time we have here in this session. So I will vote no on the motion, and I will vote no on the floor.
Thank you, Representative Ackerman. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, before I came, I was told by a number of farmers, landowners, concerned citizens across Southern Oregon that the soil classifications are far too restrictive and that something has to be done. And while we hopefully will have a good task force, that will just be more time delays and less action done. And so I'm in support of this bill, and I hope that it will pass not only out of this committee but also on the floor and be signed into law.
Any further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Rosenbaum.
No.
Representative Greenland.
No.
Representative Doyle.
No.
Representative Ackerman.
No.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Girard.
Aye. The House Bill 2984 is defeated. Okay. We shall open the House Bill, public hearing, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2984 and open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2911. Mr. Kelly?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2911 repeals priority of land to be included in the urban growth boundary. It requires local government actions to amend the urban growth boundary addresses and balances enumerated factors within the bill. Mr. Chair, you want to go over the background?
Yes.
Oregon's 240 cities and 36 counties are responsible for adopting local comprehensive plans, zoning land,
administering land use regulations and handling land use permits. The local planning must be done in accordance with state standards. The result is a mosaic of 276 local plans applied to all privately owned land in Oregon, 26 million acres. Each of Oregon's 240 cities is surrounded by an urban growth boundary. The urban growth boundary is a line on planning and zoning maps to show where a city expects to grow residentially, industrially, and commercially. A UGB often includes unincorporated land. Most of the land outside of the UGB will continue to be used for farming, forestry, low-density residential development, and urban services like sewers will not be extended to these areas. The zoning in areas outside of the boundary should prohibit, according to the Department of Land Conservation and Development, urban development and urban densities. A UGB is drawn by a combination of city, adjoining counties, and special districts that provide important services in the urbanized area. Citizens of the area and other interested people and groups also determine where the UGB will be drawn. Annexations of lands within the urban growth boundaries of Oregon communities are increasingly subject to public vote. LCDC, that's the Land Conservation Development Commission, reviews the proposed urban growth boundary to make sure it's consistent with statewide planning goals. Urbanization Goal 14 provides a decision-making hierarchy to aid communities in determining how and when conservation of land to urban uses or conversion of land to urban uses can be modified. In the 5 years from 1992 through 1996, 75 proposals to expand urban growth boundaries were approved in Oregon. They had a total of 5,162 acres to UGBs. To amend its urban growth boundary, the city must comply with the statewide planning goals and standards for establishing an urban growth boundary. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this background was taken directly off the website of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Mr. Chair.
We have 5 signed up to testify, 2 for and 3 against. So we'll bring up all the 4 at one time and give them 10 minutes and those against, those 3, 10 minutes. So John Chandler and Harlan Levy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler, Legislative Advocates, here on behalf of the Oregon Building Industry Association in support of House Bill 2911. I have to confess to you, I had a devil of a time getting ready for this hearing this morning. Normally it's my practice to bring written testimony. I'm having some things handed out that are primarily photocopies of existing law to help walk you through why the bill is in front of you. And I didn't prepare my cogent remarks in written form because it would have been a volume, not simply a one pager like I like to do for committees, because this is a very, very difficult issue that we're going to be talking about this morning. It's difficult politically, it's difficult practically, it's difficult technically. I had a conversation the other day with a Senate Democratic staffer who didn't know I was going to tell this story, so I won't name him, who asked me to come into his office to review some pieces of legislation. And we're going through the various bills on land use, and he came to this one. He said, is House Bill 2911 your bill? I said, yes, it is. He said, we hate it, don't we? And I laughed and said, yeah, you probably do. And I got thinking about it. I'm not sure why they probably do. Because what we're talking about in 2911 is, as Mr. Kelly pointed out, the issue regarding urban growth boundaries, the expansion thereof, and how to do it, what do you think about. And it is going to be a political issue. You'll hear testimony this morning. It's going to be pretty divergent from what Mr. Levy and I are going to talk to you about, I suspect. But the notion that somehow there's something offensive about the concept of a balancing test, which is what we're trying to get at in House Bill 2911, I think is... You know, perhaps my flippant comment to the Democratic staffer was just that, perhaps too flippant. What we have in front of you is the various pieces of law. I gave you a copy of 197-298, which is the current statute dealing with the priority of land when you're looking at expanding the urban growth boundary. Also a copy of Goal 14, which is a statewide planning goal that deals with urbanization. Now, you may have already read these before. If so, I congratulate you on your research and homework, and I feel badly that you had nothing more to do than to read land use statutes. The current law, 197-298, went into the ORS in 1995 as a part of House Bill 2709, which was the bill that we brought forward to establish a 20-year land supply for residential. In a sense, what I'm doing with House Bill 2911 is asking you to undo something that I had a hand in doing before. The pertinent language in 197-298, which I reproduced for you, was placed into the law as an attempt, as it turns out somewhat incorrect, of codifying existing practice. Under Oregon law prior to 1995, since the inception of land use planning, when cities looked at expanding their urban growth boundaries, it was done always with an eye on farmland preservation and resource protection, because that was the reason we started land use planning, or one of the main reasons we started land use planning in the first place. What 197-298 says, and it's written in fairly land use wonkish terms, but it basically says when you go to move a boundary, it assumes by the time you get to this particular statute, you've already identified that you have a need for more land. So we're not talking about do you or don't you. At this point, yes, you do. Now the question is, where do you move the boundary? And what the current law says is you look first at urban reserve lands, which don't exist very many places because designating urban reserves is pretty difficult. But if you have them, that's where you move the boundary first. And then after that, you look at exception lands. Exception lands are those lands under Oregon land use law that are neither farm nor forest. They're cut up, they're steep, they're otherwise unsuitable for resource use. And if once you look through the exception lands, then you look in descending priority order at the existing, or the soil types, basically. So you would take first the least productive soils and then on up to the class one productive soils. That, we thought, was basically a codification of the practice that LCDC had followed in reviewing urban growth boundaries all along. It was a negotiated process. We were happy to put it in the law then. As it has played out, it has become much more of an icon that farmland preservation has, even more than it was prior to 1995, become much more of an icon, become much more of the end result. When we look at moving a boundary, we look first at the farmland issue, not to the urban issues. I represent urban development folks, obviously, so you can filter my comments through that, and I'm sure you will. I believe that's a mistake as a policy matter. The preservation of resource land needs to be a critical piece of this puzzle. It cannot be the only piece. Farmland preservation, forest land preservation, resource land preservation, in the face of urban development needs and aspirations and goals, should not be allowed to trump. And it makes no more sense in my mind to say that farmland should trump urban expansion. It makes no more sense to say that than it would to say that urban expansion or economic development should trump farmland preservation. Both would be the wrong approach. I believe the current law, as it's been interpreted and implied, is the wrong approach. And I had a hand in drafting it. It turned out probably not to do what we thought it would do. I believe 2911 is a better approach. And it simply says we have a balancing test. That when it comes time to move an urban growth boundary, that the local government and LCDC in approving the movement should look at a balance of urban needs set out in the bill and rural needs set out in the bill. And while no one in the rural community has asked me to carry their water and probably doesn't particularly appreciate it, I would submit that the rural aspects set out in 2911 are probably a better indicator of a healthy farm economy than the soil type set out in the current law. Soil type is one indicator of agricultural productivity, but not the only one. If you go simply on soil types and a good bit of the nursery stock in Oregon, never mind the vineyard industry, the wine production industry, wouldn't have it, because much of that very productive, very economically useful, and very healthy for the economy, all that agricultural stuff is being done on, a lot of it is done on land that is not class 1, 2, 3, or 4. So what we're trying to get to here, Mr. Chairman, members, is a balancing test, and the bill says that you look at these factors, you balance them, and you make a decision between urban development needs such as affordable housing, efficient delivery of urban services, creation of jobs, efficient urban form in terms of density, connectivity, and so on, the time frame when particular lands might be able to be put to urban use, and then you balance those sorts of things against the rural needs. And we are by no means saying that this is that farmland is not important. We're saying that it isn't so important that we ought not do it mechanistically. We ought not protect it simply based on soil type. We ought not base it simply on an application of a formula. But we ought to look at what agricultural uses are productive, where they reside, when the urban growth boundary expands, what is its impact on the surrounding ag economy. Those sorts of factors that we believe will help both urban and rural residents. This is a grinding noise issue. When we passed the law in 1995, urban growth boundaries in the metro area were being discussed. They have just been expanded. There are appeals filed. The outcome of that appeal process, we do not know. You have a number of bills in front of you this session that deal with the expansion of boundaries, some of them very specifically with expansion of very specific boundaries. This is, as I said at the outset, a very difficult issue. You're going to hear from other folks this morning talking about objections to this bill, and I'm not going to presuppose what they say. It's always fun, more fun to be surprised. I do suspect that one of the comments you're going to hear, and if they don't, I'll put it in front of you because I think it's legitimate, is that you've already considered, and will be considering again, I hope, House Bill 2912, which is the Commission on Oregon Land Use Reform, which calls out in it a discussion of the farmland issue. And there's some concern that prior to having two bills on the same topic, couldn't the 2912 address this just fine? I suppose it could. I think the two bills are fundamentally different, though. One, I think, 2911, would set up the system the way many of us thought it worked in the first place, and the way it has not worked since 1995, but to restore it to, if you will, a pre-95 situation. The other thing is I hope that 2912 doesn't simply content itself with mechanical issues such as this, but instead gets into some more fundamental bedrock issues about Oregon's economy, the role of agriculture and timber production, urban development possibilities, and so forth. I think the bills can coexist together. I believe they should coexist together. In closing, Mr. Chairman, I want to call your attention to the last piece of paper I handed out to you. And in preparing my remarks, I found this in Paul Kirchhoff's draft of a paper he's written. Paul Kirchhoff was a former director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. He doesn't know I'm using this. He sent it to me. I believe it's in the public domain, and he's already been invited to find career challenges elsewhere, so it probably doesn't matter. They can't fire him twice. What he talked about, and this is, you know, from a limited perspective of having run the DLCD for a while, recommends that the priority land statute be repealed. That's 197-298. That's what this bill does. This bill repeals it and substitutes the balancing test. And what Mr. Kirchhoff says is that the current statute, the current law, is a clear example of how the goals that are supposedly equal are really not. Goal 3, which is the farmland preservation goal, now trumps any other goals because of the supremacy of the federal priority land statute. I don't believe that's a good policy. I think the 2911 helped correct that. I believe it's a good bill. I believe it's in keeping with the best traditions of Oregon land use planning to have balance, to have a system that is balanced, that looks at the factors and does not resort to a mathematical set of formulas in making tough social or political decisions. I thank you for your support of the bill, appreciate your attention this morning, and be glad to respond to questions either now or when Mr. Levy finishes at the chairs.
We'll let Mr. Levy proceed, then we'll have questions for either of our guests.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Harlan Levy, staff attorney for the Oregon Association of Realtors. I'm here to support House Bill 2911. I don't want to get too repetitive. You had a very good introduction to this bill from Mr. Chandler. Just wanted to mention a couple of items, and then I'll be very brief. The state of Oregon is a very different state today than it was when we went through all these processes, adopting the land use system and creating the goals and writing the statutes. The assumption had always been that farm and forestry was an industry and therefore required protections because they were industrial jobs, so to speak. The problem is today we don't have that situation. Those jobs are not out there in the same quantity they once were. And as a matter of fact, the high-tech industry today is the number one employer in the state, and there is no protection within the Oregon statewide land use system for those jobs. So this is a changing situation. It's a dynamic situation, and the land use of our state ought to reflect that. It has not. It has not been amended. It has not been significantly altered throughout the process that it's been in existence. The problem with the urban growth boundary expansion criteria that you currently have, the priority scheme that is contained in 197.298 that this bill would replace, is you end up with decisions that are not necessarily good, wise decisions, simply because farmland trumps everything else. This committee has heard the discussions of the North Plains urban growth boundary expansion, and, you know, without taking a position to the merits of that bill, that's a clear example of where the protection for farmland above all else has caused some very real world problems for a community that seeks to grow in what would be a normal way for them to grow. There are other examples as well. So this bill, I think, brings the urban growth boundary expansion criteria to where it ought to be. You're balancing the goals, and the goals are supposed to be equivalent. Goals 3 and goals 4 are supposed to be just as equivalent as goals 9, 10, and 11, the development goals, and yet we all know that they are not. So with that, I will conclude and thank the chair for considering this important piece of legislation.
Any questions? Representative Ackerman.
I'm sorry, sir. Basically, to either of you, I think there's a certain appeal in the balancing test if you have all the factors, but I'm wondering if we have all the factors in House Bill 2911. So my question is, where does one consider the factor of the potentially economic productive agriculture areas? As I see line 20 and 21 on page 1, factors limited to economically productive agricultural areas rather than those which may be potentially productive. Is that your intent, to eliminate the factor of considering farm area or agricultural area which would be potentially productive in the future?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackerman, no. Our intent, and it's a very good point, both to the that specific and also to whether or not we have the right factors here. I'd certainly welcome input on what factors ought to be balanced. Our intention was, frankly, and I didn't think of that particular issue, but it's a good one. My intention was to say, you balance the two goods. And we've talked about this in other fora that in this committee, that what we have a lot of times, particularly in Oregon land use law, is not one, you know, good versus bad. It's competing goods. And what we're trying to get to here is how to balance that. And ag land that could be made productive through whatever set of circumstances, application of irrigation, for example, or subtile or different cropping patterns or whatnot, that should be part of the mix as well. It is not our intention to say that you shouldn't consider that, so thank you for that. That's a good observation.
Second question, well, where would you put that within the factors? Because I read Section 2A when you say economically productive agriculture areas. I view that as a snapshot, as only considering economically productive agriculture areas in that point in time where you're considering the change in urban growth boundary. So if you're considering potential farmland, where is that a factor in this bill? Just for this record, I need to know where that's going to be. Or otherwise, we have to amend the bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, I suspect to get to the point you're trying to make, it would be an amendment to talk about the ability to look at that. I think that the snapshot is inherent, and he's right, Representative Ackerman, the snapshot is contemplated by this bill because that's almost how the system has to work in a sense. But having said that, I don't think it's fair to say that you could have to ignore what obviously could happen or would perhaps likely happen or be possibly beneficially happen outside of the scope of the camera, if you will. So I think if we could change that to say you look at those sorts of factors, what could be done with the farmland. One of the things that, if I may, Mr. Chairman, just a little expansion, that we're trying to get away from here, what I'm hoping to get away from, is what I consider to be, and since I helped draft it, I'll take a fair amount of the blame for it, a mechanistic test. Soil type, down this list, boom, 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 boom. And in my mind, that's not planning, that's something else. It may be agronomy, it may be mathematics, but it's not planning. What we're trying to get back to is a planning process, which is a balanced process, which looks at all the variables, such as productive use of ag land, both now and possibly in the future.
Representative Greenland?
Yes, Mr. Levy. Mr. Chandler pointed out in his testimony that this is about what happens after the development goal comes into place because of the 20-year residential land supply issues, and soon I think we'll have some industrial land supply issues, the determination to increase the UGB happens. That trumps everything. That's the development goal. Then the question is, which lands do you pick? And I wonder if you can talk a little bit more about your notion that the resource goal trumps the development goal, because I think we probably certainly wouldn't want that to happen. It seems to me the development goal comes first and trumps everything, and then the question is, how do you pick what land that you're going to add in order to deal with land that you have to add?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, I don't think the development goal does trump the resource protection goals. If you look at the case law and all the decisions that have come out of LCDC with respect to UGBs, the protection of farmland, the Goal 3, statewide planning Goal 3, has been shown to be the end-all be-all. And our position is maybe that's not the right policy for this state in this day and age. Why do we, elevate that particular goal above all the other goals? You're correct. There is a requirement that there be a 20-year supply of buildable land in some of the state's largest UGBs. However, when you're looking at land that will satisfy that need, you have to go through the priority scheme, and you don't get to farmland until you have shown every other possibility is not available to you. That is a trump. That is, we are going to elevate this particular category of land above all else. And, the rationale for that might have been, well, we need to protect those jobs, we need to protect that industry, we need to ensure that this, continues to be, the one of the leading industries in Oregon, but I'm not sure that's true anymore. I really am not. And if that was the rationale for this, then why don't we have some specific protections in our land use system for high-tech land? Because that's the economic driving force right now.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Don Schellenberg, Scott Ashcom, and Mary McCurdy.
Good morning again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau, 18 inches. So they say. here today representing, again, Oregon Farm Bureau. Appreciate Mr. Chandler's comments. He and I have had many discussions over the years on this issue and how you balance this, how you protect things, how you work things out. I'm pleased to hear him admit that he made a mistake at one point. thought Mr. Chandler is near perfect, but nonetheless, I do enjoy working with him. The purpose of urban growth boundaries is to separate urban land from rural land and to prevent conflict between incompatible uses. Farm Bureau has had considerable discussion regarding urban growth boundaries and their overall purpose, much of which is included in Section 2, Subsection 1 of this bill. Much of that's included in our own policy statements. While Subsection 2 attempts to state the needs for agriculture when moving an urban growth boundary, we would have to make several amendments before it would be satisfactory, and we appreciate the concept that Mr. Chandler is offering here of trying to balance things. The way it's drafted, we're not sure that that is balanced yet. In our opinion, these two subsections are more like policy statements. They propose language that is entirely subjective, and every expansion would have to be appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. I suspect that's where a lot of people think we are today, but it's our opinion that this language would be even more litigious than what we have today. What you have to have, and this is contrary to what I just heard Mr. Chandler say, what you have to have is objective criteria that tells you how and where boundaries will be expanded. And that's what the language in 215-298 does. And that's proposed to be repealed. The new language in this bill primarily deals with why and when expansion should occur instead of how and where. We would not be opposed to adding some language to 215-298 that addresses those issues. it would seem that the real issue is concerns with 215, 298, and I think that's been said this morning, and we should really be discussing if changes to that, to those statutes would be the more appropriate stance. Mr. Chandler in his comments led me to think that what they want for the urban growth boundary is really to move it into the Goal 5 process. Goal 5 process is for the protection of different environmental and natural resources, and those different resources are oftentimes found in all the other zones. And what you have in the Goal 5 process is called the EC process. That's E-S-E-E, environment, social, economic, and energy. And you look at those four aspects and you compare the two different uses and make a determination based on that comparison of what it would do to each of those different uses, and then you make a determination as to whether or not you ought to allow the use or not allow the use, or whether you can mitigate and allow the use. I would have to disagree with Mr. Levy's comments this morning indicating that he didn't think that there was any protection for the electronic industry. Well, electronic industry is inside the urban growth boundary. That is the protection for industry other than agriculture and forestry, as they are inside the urban growth boundary. It's not that they're going to go away. Nobody's trying to take that land away from them. In the agriculture industry, that's the problem we have. We have a finite amount of land, and we have an infrastructure that serves that finite amount of land. You have to have a critical mass of land in order to support that infrastructure, and each use that comes onto the farmland and removes farmland from production injures and weakens that infrastructure. So we would be interested in discussing this issue further and trying to make a good bill out of it. I think Mr. Chandler's concerns are valid. This is not a perfect system that we have. And if we can achieve a balance, better balance, we're not happy with the situation either. But so if there's a way we can achieve a better balance, we'd support that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Scott Ashkin with the Oregon Agriculture Alliance. I did have the pleasure of being at the table when House Bill 2709 was drafted in the 1995 legislative session, and I assure you that the legislature expended weeks, if not months, on the crafting of the language which is proposed to be repealed by House Bill 2911 in this session. The hierarchy of development that is included in ORS 197-298 is it's really a Goal 14 issue. Goal 14 was interpreted for many years, and I believe technically, legally, it would still be interpreted if it was taken up through the court process on appeal, to provide a process of finding alternatives to expanding an urban growth boundary into productive farmland. And initially, in the 1990s, prior to the passage of 2709, The Land Conservation Development Commission and local governments had developed a kind of informal process of determining are there any alternative acres that can be converted from a rural use, which is what Goal 14 describes, to an urbanizable or urban density land use pattern. And the practice was in those days that the DLCD and the local planning jurisdiction would identify any alternatives inside the existing urban growth boundary before they made a decision to expand the UGB onto rural lands or farm lands, lands that were productive for farming. You have to recall that the real cornerstone of our state's land use planning process with regard to agricultural land is found in the policy statement, the Agricultural Land Use Policy Statement in ORS 215-243. And as ugly as it sounds, keeping farmland in farm use and protecting the agricultural industry in this state was viewed by the 1973 legislature when it passed Senate Bill 100 as the mechanism, the mechanism for keeping farmland and farm use and protecting the aesthetic characteristics of the environment as well as the economic viability of our agricultural industry. It sounds rather harsh, but if you read ORS 215-243, you'll see that that is precisely the cornerstone agricultural land use policy of the state. Over the years, the hierarchy that you find in House Bill 2709, and it's now written into statute as ORS 197-298, which this bill proposes to appeal, it was carefully constructed in order to provide an examination of all of the alternatives to expanding urban growth boundaries onto productive farmlands. This bill, insofar as it repeals that statute, we believe is an error, a mistake, and a step backwards. And we would oppose it if that's all it does. Now, with that said, we believe that there probably is a legitimate need for an alternative needs test, which provides local planning jurisdictions an option at looking at UGB expansions for a specific needs which may not have existed in previous years, such as high-tech industry developments or various kinds of sectors of our high-tech industries. And I think that most of the parties involved here would find that would be very useful to develop an alternative needs kind of a test that that allows a focus of UGB expansion in a smaller area for the purpose of identifying whether or not there is suitability for a new kind of industrial use, for example, or a new kind of land use for that that acreage. So we think that that is a direction which this legislation could go, which would result in a public benefit for all. We cannot support the wholesale repeal of the 2709 hierarchy. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Chair Garrard and members of the committee. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy. I'm a staff attorney with 1000 Friends of Oregon. I'd like to just echo some of the comments that have already been made, that repeal of this section of the statute undoes the deal that was made back in 1995, and I was present at it, as was Scott, when House Bill 2709 was crafted. And that legislation, for the first time, put into statute a requirement that urban growth boundaries contain a 20-year land supply for residential uses. In exchange for that, the bill also included the section proposed to be repealed here, which establishes a hierarchy for bringing lands into the UGB, with exception lands, or those already partially developed lands, coming in first and farm and forest land last. But that hierarchy contains a balancing section, which hasn't been mentioned here. That says you can go to farm and forest land first if you have a specific type of identified land need that was used by Metro when it just expanded its urban growth boundary to bring in some of the most productive land in the world into the UGB for high-tech industry in Washington County. They brought in 200 acres of land at Sheep Road, which we have not appealed for a high-tech industrial use. You can also bring farm or forest land in if urban services cannot be reasonably provided to other lands without bringing in that farm and forest land. And you can also bring in farm and forest land ahead of already developed lands if the efficiency of land uses would merit that. So there already is a balancing in the existing statute. It's an urban myth that Goal 3, the agricultural lands goal, trumps all the other goals because, in fact, as Representative Greenleaf mentioned, if development needs additional lands, if urban development needs additional lands, they can expand onto farm and forest land. The hierarchy in the statute simply says, we want that to be your last choice. You have to show you have a good reason for it if it's not going to be your last choice. As I mentioned, Metro just expanded its urban growth boundary by about 18,000 acres, which included farmland for both industrial and residential uses. And just to respond a little bit to what Mr. Levy said, the agricultural industry in Oregon has been consistently growing every year for the past 20 years. Very few other industries, including high-tech, can say that. And in fact, the agricultural industry is the number one industry in terms of bulk that's exported out of the Port of Portland, and it's number two in value going out of the Port of Portland. And it's been increasing every year, which is not true of the high-tech industry. So I think it's a myth to say that the agricultural goal trumps the others, and it's also a myth to say our agricultural industry is in decline, because it's not. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Don Schellenberg again. The Holy Scripture says pride goeth before fall, and no sooner had I got done gently chiding Mr. Chandler for his mistake when I was brought down to my knees and noticing my fallibility in my testimony here, I listed 215-298 two times in my testimony. The correct site would be 197-298. Thank you.
I think there is enough testimony here to determine that I'd like to see John and Harlan get together with the three of you and discuss an amendment to this bill. Mr. Chandler, do you have any problem with that?
No.
Okay, then I'm going to close the public hearing. I'm sorry, are there any questions? I'd like you to come back, though, because of the time frame that we're in. If you can come back next Tuesday, I would appreciate that. And we will re-look at this bill at that time. Okay. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2911. And the representative's order.
Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on Bill 3164.
Representative Zahner moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 3164. Those of the opinion that the rules should be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on 3164 will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Excused.
Representative Atherton.
Aye.
Representative
Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Gerard.
Chair votes aye. Now we reconsider House Bill 3164. It is now in order to accept a motion on the reconsideration.
I move we reconsider 3164.
Representative Greenlick moves that we reconsider the vote on House Bill 3164. Committee, we have an amendment to this bill.
It's here somewhere. Huh?
Mr. Romain, would you like to come up and briefly explain to the committee what this amendment does, please? Okay. I will first announce that the rules are suspended.
Do you want to open a work session on this?
Representative Zahner, we need a motion to reconsider the vote on House Bill 3164.
I move we reconsider the vote.
That's the one.
Okay, by which House Bill 3164.
Representative Zahner moves that we reconsider the vote. On House Bill 3164, is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
What are we doing now?
We're opening the floor to reconsider the vote. Is that the notion so we can take an amendment?
Aye.
Yes. Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Excuse.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. So we will, the committee has approved the reconsideration of the vote on House Bill 3164. We'll now open a work session on House Bill 3164 and Mr. Romain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Paul Romain. I'm here representing the city of North Plains. The amendment that we asked you to pass, which you so graciously did last time, was a bit on the overbroad side. After careful reading by one of your members, I believe Representative Greenwood staff pointed out to us, the city of North Plains, with that amendment, has the ability to basically take in all of unincorporated Washington County as part, and it could become the largest city in the state of Oregon, which I'm sure that...
Only the part below Highway 26.
Yeah, but it has to remain below Highway 26. This was not really the intent of the bill. It was a bill to limit what city of North Plains could do. So we've redrafted it. So this one, after careful reading by everybody concerned, now limits it so the city may elect not to include within its urban growth boundary any land located across the freeway. So this is 3164-2. We would ask for your adoption of that amendment as the bill, and then pass the bill out to the floor. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Romain?
Do we have the dash twos in front of us?
I believe our committee assistant is on his way to do just that.
Okay.
The chair does have a copy.
I'll be happy just to raise an issue and discussion or question. I was the one that picked it up. I knew it wasn't intended. The dash one amendment said to allow the city to add or to exclude any land across Highway 26, and I knew that was not the intention of Representative Kitts. So, oh, here we have it. So I'll be very happy if it's appropriate, sir, now to move adoption of the dash two amendments, which only allows them to exclude land below Highway 26, not to add land below Highway 26.
The chair apologizes. He just discovered he had all the amendments. very good. Representative Greenlick has moved that we accept the dash two amendments to 3164. Is there any discussion?
It's not actually on this, Mr. Chair, thank you. It's not actually on this motion, but I had a question, I guess, if the witness or anyone else on the committee that knows the answer. The organizations that opposed the original bill, which I believe were the Oregon Farm Bureau and 1,000 Friends, does this amendment change their opposition in any way? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I do not believe it does. I don't think this does anything except actually make the bill do what we intended it to do
right.
In the first place. I still think all the players are probably still about in the same place, although you would have to ask them particularly.
We have a motion on the floor to accept the dash two amendments to House Bill 3164. Any discussion? Further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Doyle.
Excuse?
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Greenwald.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
No.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Girard.
Aye. The dash two amendments to House Bill 3164 are accepted. Representative Richardson, do you have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3164, as amended, be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Richardson has moved House Bill 3164 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Representative Rosenbaum.
Chair, I'll just reiterate, I have the same objections that I did when we voted on this last week, that I think it inappropriately injects the legislature into a process that's working as it should be and sets a bad precedent of writing laws that deal with one specific situation and will tend to make the legislature take the place of local government and land use planning at that level. And I simply can't support that.
Any further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Yes. Excuse? It's already done.
Representative Greenland?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
No.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Girard.
Aye.
Thank you.
House Bill 3164, as amended, is carried with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Kitts will carry the bill. Okay, we're going to do a couple of quick taps here. On open a public hearing on House Bill 2886 and close the work session on House Bill 2886. We will also, this will not be a tap, we will hear this, a public hearing, open a public hearing on House Bill 2849.
Representative Doyle, I'm sorry. Do you wish to vote on 3164?
I do.
We can reopen the work session on House Bill 3164.
No.
Representative Doyle votes no. And we close the work session on House Bill 3164. And I think we just opened 2849.
Here's the topic.
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2849 directs counties to establish one or more rural zones for rural lands that do not qualify for zoning as exclusive farm use zones or mixed farm use, farm forest use. It directs counties to plan for land use and land divisions and rural zones established. It allows development without adopting exception to specified land use planning goals. Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have two to speak in favor, three opposed to this bill. So we'll bring up the polls. Those that are for the position, Dave Honeycutt, Harlan Levy.
Doing a chair shuffle.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of 2849. Before I tell you what 2849, the lands that 2849 applies to, let me tell you the lands that 2849 does not apply to. Okay, these are lands where 2849 will not apply. All lands within urban growth boundaries. All lands falling within LCDC's definition of agricultural land. This won't change LCDC's definition of agricultural land, nor will it apply to any land that falls within LCDC's definition of agricultural land, which would include, in western Oregon, all lands of predominantly class 1 through 4 soils. There's 8 soil classes. This is 1 through 4. In eastern Oregon, all lands of predominantly class 1 through 6 soils. There's 8 classes. This is 1 through 6 in eastern Oregon. In addition to those soils, in western and eastern Oregon, all lands which are suitable for farm use, taking into consideration soil fertility, suitability for grazing, climatic conditions, existing and future availability of water for farm irrigation purposes, existing land use patterns, technological and energy inputs required, or accepted farming practices. So you've got 1 through 4 in eastern Oregon, plus all of those additional lands, in western Oregon, 1 through 6 in eastern Oregon, plus all of those additional lands. In addition to that, the ones that I just mentioned in both western and eastern Oregon, all lands which are necessary to permit farm practices to be undertaken on adjacent or nearby lands. So essentially, House Bill 2849 won't apply to any of those. In addition, House Bill 2849 won't apply to land falling within LCDC's definition of forest land, which includes all lands acknowledged as forest land, so everything that was zoned for forest at the time that Goal 4 was created, it won't apply to all land in addition to that is suitable for commercial forest uses, all land in addition to those two things that is adjacent or nearby land necessary to prevent forest operations or practices, and just so we can have a catch-all, in addition to all of those three things, all land that is other forested land that maintains soil, air, water, and fish and wildlife resources. So you can understand, essentially, that this bill doesn't apply to hardly anything. Oh, and of course, I forgot, all lands, this bill, House Bill 2849, does not apply to all land for which an exception to LCDC's agricultural or forest goals has been taken. So it doesn't apply to exception lands either. It only applies in a very narrow circumstance to lands which aren't farm forest or mixed farm forest lands under the exhaustive criteria set forth above, and lands that aren't necessary to allow farming or forestry to occur in the vicinity, lands that aren't inside urban growth boundaries, and lands that aren't exception lands. What we have is a black hole that's been created in this state for those very small minority of acreage outside of the UGB. Remember, 97% of the privately owned lands outside the UGB are zoned for farm and forest. We're not addressing that. The other 3%, the majority of which are exceptions lands, we're not addressing that either. But there are some lands outside of UGBs for which an exception hasn't been taken because they simply don't fall within the definition of agricultural and forest land. And by taking an exception, you're saying that my land falls within the definition, but for some reason, it shouldn't be considered farm and forest land. So that in the off chance that you have land outside of the UGB that meets the definition under 2849, this bill allows counties to establish and maintain rural zones, and the key is rural zone, and allow for various industrial, residential, and commercial type uses. That doesn't mean they'll be able to make cities. What it does mean is that what the language in 2849 clearly provides is that the zones must be rural in nature. The counties will be able, if they choose to do so, and this is again, this doesn't mandate that the counties do anything. It gives them the option. The counties can provide urban type services to avoid the vagaries of the Thousand Friends decision, Thousand Friends versus LCDC, and of course counties will also be able to create some type of rural industrial type development in these areas. But understand, this doesn't mean that there won't be any planning. The idea is, rather than making you folks the local governing board, the local planning board, we're going to give some counties some flexibility in those areas that don't fall within LCDC's definition of farm or forest lands, which essentially means they can have, given the broad nature of the definition of farm and forest land in LCDC's Goal 3 and 4, basically means they won't have any impact on the farm or forest economy at all. And in that rare situation, it seems to me appropriate that we'd actually divert growth into those areas rather than allowing growth to occur in those areas. We divert growth away from those areas rather than allowing it to occur in those areas. So that's what House Bill 2849 does. LCDC will continue to maintain control over the environmental aspects of those areas. They'll still have their Goal 5 authority to plan for wildlife habitat, wetlands, riparian corridors, wilderness areas, if any of those resources exist in the areas to which 2849 applies, which they probably won't because of the broad definition of forest land. And in the event, if they do, LCDC will still be able to apply the Goal 5 in those areas. If 2849 provides a very, very modest sliver of control to counties in areas where ag, forest, and significant natural resources aren't present, it seems like a great idea to allow the counties to develop jobs and housing for the local economy, particularly those counties that aren't part of the Tri-County metropolitan area that would actually benefit from some development. So with that, I'll be more than happy to answer any questions.
Maybe we can catch Harlan first. You got 5 minutes out of the 15 left.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Harlan Levy, staff attorney with the Oregon Association of Realtors. We support this bill, House Bill 2849. We believe that there is a definite need out there in rural counties for some economic development to create some jobs, expand the tax base. You've heard all that before. In a nutshell, we support this bill and would ask that this committee go ahead and move this bill to the floor. Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah, Dave, can you help me a little bit? Can you explain your perspective on what 3C through G does?
Vice Chair's Honor, Representative Greenlee. Yeah, 3C through G, those are the various goals. The Willamette River Greenway, I believe, is Goal 15. Estuaries, I think, are Goal 16. Coastal shorelands are 17, and coastal I guess that's 16 through 19. They just go in order. Essentially, what that's done, the reason that that's there, Representative Green Lake, is to give the coastal counties, if they so choose, the ability to take advantage of this bill without the limitations imposed by those particular goals. But understand, each one of those particular goals has limitations on the ability of the local governments to develop. For example, the coastal shorelands goal, I believe, it's the coastal beaches and dune areas has limitations on riprap. Governor Kitzhaber riprapped in front of his home, and of course, nobody said anything. But what the idea there is that if a local community wants to develop, a local coastal county wants to develop and wants to be able to take advantage of the riprap provisions, provided they can comply with all the requirements of the DEQ and the DSL and state parks, they ought to have the ability to do that.
If I may follow up, I mean, my impression of this is it takes away, I mean, allows them to do things without regard to those other restrictions. Is that not reading it?
Vice Chair's Honor, Representative Greenland, that's correct, but I guess my response is, at some point, it seems to me that we ought to have at least a modest amount of trust in the local governments that actually implement the land use laws that we have, and this bill creates or attempts to create in those areas that aren't farm and forest zones a modest amount of trust in the local governments. They're still subject, obviously, to Goal 5, which is the natural resources goal. So if the LCDC determines that in those areas there are significant natural resources, then the commission can still regulate as far as that goes. But if we're going to allow the local governments to plan, then we have to be able to give them at least a little bit of faith that they'll do it properly.
So this does essentially wipe out protection for those five categories of land.
Vice Chair's Honor, Representative Greenlake, to the contrary, it doesn't wipe out anything. The question is, are we going to allow local governments the ability, you make the assumption that local governments, if given the choice, will just go out willy-nilly and do whatever they want and wipe out.
I don't make that assumption any more than you make the assumption they're doing everything right.
Well, let's go through the chair. Okay.
I'm sorry, sir.
Not getting the contest here.
Well, Vice Chair's Honor, Representative Greenlake, it won't wipe out anything. I put faith in local governments, and if we're going to allow local governments to plan, then we ought to give them a little bit of flexibility, and this does that precisely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Vice Chair.
Representative Ackerman.
Thank you. As I read this bill, I assume that the lands that you are referring to are those beyond a current urban growth boundary. Is that correct?
Chair Garrard, Representative Ackerman, yes. The answer to that is yes.
And would it also be correct that this bill then contemplates an expansion of an urban growth boundary to incorporate the particular zones that you have itemized in this bill?
Chair Garrard, Representative Ackerman, the answer to that is no, as the bill clearly provides the zones must remain rural, although there is a provision that gives the local government the ability to site, to extend essentially urban services, sewer, water, what have you, into these areas if they so choose. The zones still must remain rural. LCDC in 2000, I believe, Mr. Levy and I were on this work group, created a rule that attempted to define rural residential more clearly than the Oregon Supreme Court had done in 1986 with the Thousand Friends versus LCDC Curry County decision. Unfortunately, that rule only applies to exception lands, those lands to which an exception to Goal 3 and 4 has been taken. This bill does not apply to exception lands, specifically doesn't apply to exception lands, because in order to take an exception, you're essentially making an acknowledgement that Goal 3, the definition of agricultural land in Goal 3 or the definition of forest land in Goal 4 applies to your property, and for some reason you want an exception out of that. This bill only applies to those lands that don't fall within the definition of ag land in Goal 3 or forest land in Goal 4.
I have a follow-up on that. Does that mean then that this process is not subject to ORS 197.298, which sets up a prioritization of the lands to be included within an urban growth boundary?
Chair Garrard, Representative Ackerman, that's correct, because this bill doesn't address expansions of urban growth boundaries.
But one more question then. That doesn't it follow that what the objective here is to establish rural zones outside an urban growth boundary for which the county can provide infrastructure services such as streets, sidewalks, sewers, and things of that nature?
Chair Garrard, Representative Ackerman, the counties would be able to provide, would potentially be able to provide those types of services, but the bill still requires that the zones be rural in nature.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mike Carrier, Don Schellenberg, and Randy Tucker. Gentlemen, I would appreciate the Reader's Digest version, but you need to have fair time here.
Mr. Chair, then I will go first. For the record, my name is Mike Carrier, and my testimony will be, like my stature and temperament, short and direct. I really had only intended to stand on the written testimony I provided to the committee today, but after hearing the testimony, I was compelled to testify that simply we have grave concerns about this bill and recommend that you oppose this bill. As managers of the Willamette Greenway and the Ocean Shores, we see great potential for this to have serious impacts, and we think that the things that our desire to accomplish this bill are already provided for in the exception process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Randy?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Randy Tucker, 1000 Friends of Oregon. As I sat in the back of the room listening to the testimony that we heard, I was wondering if I was looking at the same bill that Mr. Honeycutt was looking at. We strongly disagree with his interpretation of what the bill actually does and the lands that it applies to. Our reading of this bill is that it is another version of the bill that you just passed in the House last week, House Bill 2689, but on steroids. Essentially, it does apply, and the testimony that you've received in written form from the Department of Land Conservation and Development so indicates it does apply to exception lands, which is a greater amount of land in the state than all the land included in urban growth boundaries combined, and it allows development on those lands without regard to the not only the urbanization goal, Goal 14, which is in 3B in the bill, and the public facilities goal, which is in 3A in the bill, but all the other goals listed in C through G as well. So it's an even broader version of the bill that you just passed the House and that has headed to the Senate to allow, essentially, as far as we can tell, unlimited urban development in whatever zones these counties designate that are in the exception areas. It may also apply to lands known as non-resource lands and maybe that's what it's intended to apply to, and my colleague Carrie McLaren is much more conversant on that question than I am, is sitting behind me to answer any questions you might have. But the bottom line is, like 2689, this bill seems to make many urban growth boundaries in the state meaningless and would result in an explosion of or potentially result in an explosion of rural sprawl. I noted in that line 9 of the bill that the counties can create conditions and standards for land divisions in rural zones. Well, we have those in rural right now for rural residential land, but apparently this bill supersedes those minimum lot sizes. So it seems as though either we're looking at two different bills or we strongly disagree with the interpretation of the bill that was presented to you by Mr. Honeycutt. We strongly oppose this bill. It's a radical departure from our current land use planning program, and I'll end my testimony there. If you have any questions about what it applies to, Carrie might be better able to provide that analysis.
Thank you, Randy. Don?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau.
As I was poring over this bill last night, too, my thought was, and in my written testimony, you see the first sentence, Mr. Chairman, this one's a puzzle. I couldn't figure out what in the world they're trying to accomplish here. But again, having listened to Mr. Hunnicutt's testimony, understand more where they're coming from. One of the major concerns I would have, line six, I don't know if you want to prove maybe what is a bad bill or not, but on line six, if you remove the words appropriate and, it would make a whole lot more sense to me. With that word appropriate in there, it gave me the indication that you didn't know what was appropriate, who made that determination. But if it's limited to lands that are qualified to be zoned for exclusive farm use or forest or mixed farm forest, well, then you've got some parameters, then you know what you're talking about. So I might make that suggestion. Other than that, I don't know what my position is on the bill. it's too confusing, and I guess maybe if you can't figure out what you do, you always, you know, when you don't know what to do, say no. But other than that, Mr. Chairman, I'll just close my testimony with that.
Mr. Brennan, did you have a comment?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just here to provide any answers to any questions you might have about our differences in terms of statutory interpretation of this bill. Thank you.
Any questions of our panel? Seeing none, thank you.
We cleared up all questions.
Apparently so. Really good. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2849 and open a work session on House Bill 2849. Representative Richardson.
Before motion is made, I'd like to just ask the chair whether or not, as a friendly amendment, we would want to consider deleting those two words and then just have the LC do that after it's passed but it's on its way to the House.
We can do that.
Would we need
the chair? Is there a discussion on the committee?
I'm going to repeat the motion, please.
On those words.
Okay.
Simply, we're in work session and we're just discussing the bill at the moment. So.
On line six of the bill, it says more rural zones for those lands that are, and then it says, not appropriate and qualified to be zoned. If we took out appropriate and, it would say rural zones for those lands that are not qualified to be zoned for exclusive farm use. And Mr. Chellenberg was saying that by having appropriate, it's a subjective kind of thing, but if we deleted the appropriate and just had it be exclusive, or just have it be qualified, then it would be less open for interpretation later.
Mr. Hunnicutt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dave Hunnicutt, we're not opposed to the deletion of those words, but I would simply point out on the exceptions issue, the language in subsection 1, the portion that you're reading, makes it clear that this bill does not apply to exception areas. Exception areas are qualified to be zoned for exclusive farm use. The lands fall within the definition of exclusive farm or forest use. That's why you're taking an exception to them. You're saying that, yes, my land meets that definition, but for some reason I want an exception from it. So it's clear in subsection 1 that this bill doesn't apply to exception.
Any question?
I'd also say that having the and is conjunctive, so it has to be appropriate and and qualified, and so you don't have to have the appropriate in there because, I mean, if that's a clarification that is requested by one person, then there's no reservation by the carrier of the bill or the proposer of the bill, then I think we ought to consider doing that. So I would make a motion. I'd make a motion that we approve House Bill. Well,
are you amending it first?
I don't know the exact way to do that. I want to make an amendment that gets made by LC on its way out of here.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, that's called a conceptual amendment. LC has advised us that that cannot be done. They won't support. But I can call Greg Chamoff if you like and have him come down here and give you an opinion on this.
I'll change it.
we can leave it the way it is then, and if that's important, the Senate can make that change.
All right.
Can I make a motion?
Chair,
I move that we approve that House Bill 2849 be passed out of committee to the floor with the due pass recommendation as it currently reads.
Representative Richardson moves 2849 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Representative Greenlee.
Yes, I do want to put on the record, this one does scare me. I think you won't find a stronger supporter for local autonomy, but I think there are some times when state needs transcend local autonomy, and the notion of being able to develop a rural zone which is a pseudo-urban zone, a zone that allows virtually any urban, most urban uses in the Willamette River Greenway and estuaries and westlands and coastal shorelands and beaches and marine reserves, that whole business in three just makes me very nervous. I know Representative Zahner is interested in the ability to use a piece of land that's otherwise rural for a use that may make some sense, but this one, which includes, incidentally, the statement that the county shall do this, not that the counties may do this, in subsection 2 in various places, just strikes me as opening up a Pandora's box that makes me very nervous. I think this is just opens up the ability to do things that I suspect there are a lot of counties that would not be too happy to have the ability to do these kinds of things, because it opens them up for all sorts of pressures under 3C through 3G that I think are going to cause enormous problems. I will be voting no.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have problems with this bill, and I think that the discussion that's taken place over which lands we're even talking about and what the meaning of the language of lands that are not appropriate or qualified to be zoned shows that by passing this, we're potentially affecting a great deal of land in Oregon without being sure which lands or how much land. And in fact, although they didn't provide oral testimony, there's a statement here from the Department of Land Conservation and Development that says that there's approximately 990,000 acres that are now zoned for rural development that would be open to development, and that would be more land than's now included in the entire urban growth boundary for our whole state. So it seems to me this bill, probably more than any other bill we've voted on, has very sweeping potential consequences. And I am concerned about the coastal lands particularly, because I think those are lands that are really only protected by the goals that this bill would say we don't have to pay attention to anymore. And beyond that, it seems like if we're going to tell local governments to do something, we ought to be considering what effect it's having on the counties which are going to have to implement this. They didn't come forward and ask for this bill. We've had no testimony from them that they need this ability, and so I will be voting no today.
Any further discussion? Representative Ackerman.
Yes, I want to repeat an argument I made earlier this morning, and that is, if we're contemplating some form of land use commission to review all land use laws in the state during the interim, I again oppose, just on procedural grounds, any radical or wholesale change in land use planning as it exists now. But actually, to the bill itself, I think it's poorly drafted. I'm not certain what it intends to do. I think it leads us into various court interpretations, which I don't think is good policy. I don't know what land this applies to. If it doesn't apply to land that's not qualified or appropriate to be zoned for exclusive farm use, forest use, or mixed farm and forest use, I have a problem in that Section 2 is written mostly in the past tense. In other words, it doesn't say that the bill does not apply to land which is currently zoned as exclusive farm use, forest use, mixed farm, and forest use. So no record has been made to explain what the drafters intend by that. I think written, read literally, you could do one of these rural zones on an exclusive farm use property because the statutes or the section 2 is written in the past tense. I think it's also an attempt to circumvent OR 197.298, which is the current law, which establishes a prioritization of lands which can come within an urban growth boundary. So for those reasons, I think we have both procedural and substantive flaws in this bill that make it unacceptable for forwarding to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
No.
Representative Doyle?
Yes.
Representative Greenwood?
No.
Representative Rosenbaum?
No.
Representative Zahner?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Girard?
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2849 is passed. Representative Zahner, would you like to carry the bill? And Representative Zahner will carry, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2849. Committee, we have advised the clerk that we may exceed our 10:30 limit in that we'd like to finish the agenda that we have cut out for ourselves, and we have been advised that they will come get us if they need us, when they need us. Yes, right. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 3265. Mr. Dewey. Mr. Administrator, will you...
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3265 allows non-putrescible solid waste disposal site located in a county that has adopted marginal lands provisions approved before January 1, 2002 to be maintained, expanded, or enhanced until January 1, 2006. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for your information and knowledge, Lane and Washington counties are the only Oregon counties that adopted marginal lands provisions, Mr. Chair.
We only have two to testify on this bill, and that's Mike Dewey and John Chandler, and here they are. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mike Dewey, representing Waste Management. With me is John Chandler, also representing Waste Management. We will hopefully be brief. Waste Management owns and operates landfills, solid waste collection, and recycling facilities in Oregon, and is also in the collection business of solid waste. Waste Management operates a non-putrescible solid waste landfill in Washington County known as the Hillsboro Landfill. When we talk about non-putrescible waste, we're talking about other than wet waste, the garbage that we develop and create usually at home. This is demolition waste, special waste, those kinds of waste. Let me say at the outset that last session you passed House Bill 3123, which basically allowed for the expansion of the Hillsboro Landfill, and I'll explain why you did that. And we put a sunset of January 1, 2004. And we are not sure that we are going to be able to get through all of the applications in Washington County by that particular time. Now, that bill passed both unanimously in the House and Senate, so it was fairly non-controversial. The farming community did not oppose it. LCDC, the department, did not oppose it. There was no opposition to it. So literally, all we are doing is we are asking for an extension of the sunset. In reality, when we take a look at this bill, we are only focusing on the Hillsboro Landfill and its expansion. It doesn't bring any other landfills, because of the way it's written, into the expansion. Now, let me explain why we needed to do that. As a result of a court case in 1998, a court of appeals court case, and this is basically what the court said, existing facilities wholly within a farm use zone may be maintained, enhanced, or expanded subject to other conditions of law. Now, as I noted, we have a Hillsboro Landfill, and it is located both in an EFU zone and a rural residential zone. So under the court's opinion, it's not wholly within the EFU zone. Therefore, under law, it could not expand. Now, everybody has been in agreement, and also the county, with regard to the expansion, that this is needed in part to continue the life of the landfill, and also to, and they're going through the permitting requirements, to locate site, a material recovery center there, so that as opposed to disposing the demolition waste and the other waste, they can recover the waste, and they need additional property to do that. So what we are asking for is a very narrow piece of legislation. We understood that in some cases that's not necessarily the best policy. We were concerned about the governor and whether or not he would want to do that last session, and obviously the governor did sign that particular piece of legislation. And again, there really isn't any opposition. If this bill were not to pass and we could not get through the land use processes, over time it would require the residents to have to go either 17 or 30 miles to additional facilities outside of the county. So we do hope you will pass this bill and we can move it forward. Happy to answer any questions, John. I'm not sure if you have anything you want to add.
Here to help with questions and or declaration.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenleaf.
Please, the committee will indulge me for a moment for a little bit of freshman education. Would you explain to me how Section 3 works as being a sunset, that sunsets something by making something else happen at a particular point?
Well, if you look at the, Mr. Chair and Representative Greenleaf, if you look at the text of the law, basically what happens, and this is in 3123 in the statute, and you don't have that in front of you, what happens is that you have some additional language that speaks to this particular landfill in marginal lands. And then what, in January 1 of 2006, the old statute comes back into effect.
I got it. So that in effect is a sunset.
Right.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Anyone else wish to speak on House Bill 3265? Close the public hearing on House Bill 3265. Open a work session on House Bill 3265.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to move 3265 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Zauner moves House Bill 3265 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Backerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenleaf.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Representative Richardson.
Excused.
Representative Zauner.
Aye.
Chairman Berard.
Votes aye. House Bill 3265 is passed, and we'll see if Representative Krupp would like to carry this bill. The chair would entertain a motion to put this on the consent calendar.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion we put this on the consent calendar.
Motion has been made by Representative Zauner that we place House Bill 3265 on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Greenleaf.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Excuse? Oh, Representative Rosenbaum is just... Would Representative Rosenbaum like to vote on the bill?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum requests any objections to Representative Rosenbaum voting on House Bill 3265?
None.
Seeing none, Representative?
He speaks for the group.
No, I have none.
How do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum votes aye on House Bill 3265. Now it's your turn to vote on placing House Bill 3265 on the consent calendar.
I vote aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye. Excused.
Representative
Zauner.
Aye.
Chair Berard.
Aye. Chair votes aye. House Bill 3265 is placed on the consent calendar.
you want to see if you can get Representative Crummell?
Committee will stand at ease. We need to have Representative Crummell, who will present item 384 to the committee, so the committee will stand at ease until Representative Crummell can be located.
Have you tap all the other ones?
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah. You got a quorum.
Yeah. Well, on recess, the committee, while we have a moment and... public hearing on House Bill 2808. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2808. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3089 and close the public hearing on House Bill 3089. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3514. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3514. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3521 and close the public hearing on House Bill 3521. Shall open a public hearing on House Bill 3395 and close the public hearing on House Bill 3395. Shall open a public hearing on House Bill 2037 and close the public hearing on House Bill 2037. Shall open a public hearing on House Bill 3241 and close the public hearing on House Bill 3241. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3511 and close the public hearing on House Bill 3511.
Productive use of
and
time.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Greenwick. That was an outstanding suggestion. Committee, we now open a public hearing on House Bill 3084, Representative Crummell. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning,
Mr. Chair. I'll have your staff turn on the overhead here, if you would, and then that way we can see what I'm talking about. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for having a public hearing on House Bill 3084. I had to figure out where I was. I'm state for the record, I'm State Representative Jerry Crummell. The purpose of this bill is to have Metro include in the urban growth boundary for the metropolitan area an area known as the north side of Clay Street. And this is very specific. And the reason for this is that the sort of the genesis of this goes back to 1996, when the Department of Corrections was deciding that they wanted to build a prison in the Wilsonville area. And then what they ended up doing was going to, instead of going to the damaged area, they decided that they would go to an area that was commonly referred to as Day Road, which actually sat on the boundary, it sat on the north boundary of Wilsonville, and the property is actually on Graham's Ferry at the end of Day Road, and is boundaried by Cahila Street on the south and Clay Street on the north, and Graham's Ferry on the east, and then the railroad tracks on the west. And the purpose of this bill is to bring the area on Clay Street. Is this on?
Yes, Representative, it is.
Okay. What do I have to do to make it work?
It's not aiming at it.
It's off somewhere. Okay. Anyway, as you can see from your map, I'm trying to... what I wanted to do is show this so that everybody else could see the area that I'm talking about. But the purpose here is that we have some property owners that are on the north side of Clay Street. Some of these properties are as small as 1 acre and as large as 7 acres. The depth of the properties is about 660 feet. And so I do also have a -1 amendment that I hope the committee has received that clarifies this a little bit more. because what we want to make sure of is that the whole properties on the north side of Clay Street would be brought into the urban growth boundary. The primary purpose of this is that we have people that have built homes and have lived in this area, but now have been negatively impacted, quite frankly, by the prison being put in there, and this is actually becoming an industrial use. The prison would actually be considered an industrial use, although I recognize that people do live there. But at the same time, on the west side of the railroad track that you can see on the map that I have handed out, there is a. I'm sorry that our thing isn't working. Do to make it work, but anyway, is that on the west side of the railroad track?
Directions up on top there, right?
On the west side of the railroad tracks is Morse Brothers, which is a gravel pit. And then on the end of Clay Street, you can see it's kind of a little bulb there on the map that you have, is a piece of property that has just been designed and developed, or is being developed as a housing unit, but will house an excavation business. So there are several trucks a day, dump trucks a day, that are going up and down that road. And then the rest of the properties between Graham's Ferry Road, which is the main road that says Ferry on it on your map, And the property that I was just speaking to on the west end, there are all houses. One property owner has been negatively impacted. She went for the property right next to where the excavation business is going to be. She went to the bank to try to refinance her house, and actually was given or was told by the bank that her property value had dropped by $50,000, and she was denied the financing for the house. And this is, I would just like to read part of this into the record, if I might, Mr. Chair. This is to me, Representative Jerry Crummel. I am writing this memo for your consideration in the process of trying to accomplish the rezoning of properties bordering Coffee Creek Prison. I am located on Clay Street just north of the site. Recently, I have attempted to refinance a property on which I have lived for 20 years to take advantage of the currently low interest rates. The lending institution that I chose is Home Street Bank. After getting the appraisal, I was informed that my property is externally obsolete and denied the loan. The amount of the refinance request was less than 50% of the Washington County appraised value for the property and dwelling. The labeling of the property as externally obsolete was not only a surprise but a significant shock. The loan refusal was after pictures had been taken from my property looking at the neighboring properties. This refusal also comes with the accepted knowledge that my credit references are perfect according to the lending institution, and the knowledge that this has been my primary residence for 20 years and am a current loan holder in good standing at this very same lending institution. This experience has yet again reinforced in my mind and opinion that this property is no longer truly appropriate for the current zoning of AF5. Thank you in advance for your consideration. So what I'm trying to do here, Mr. Chair, to keep my comments very very brief, is to have these properties brought into the urban growth boundary. The local government then, in taking this property into the urban growth boundary, would be able to put an overlay zone on it. An overlay overlays the current use, so that if the property owners at some point in time decided that they wanted to take advantage of being able to sell the properties for the current best use, which is going to be industrial and commercial development, they would be, in fact, be able to do that. By upzoning their property, they might be able to retain and regain some of their value that they have lost in the property because of, quite frankly, state actions. So with that, I will close, be glad to answer any questions, and I ask for your support of House Bill 3084. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions of Representative Fellow, Representative Ackerman?
Yes, Representative. I just have a technical question on the drafting of the -1 amendments.
Certainly.
I'm looking at page 4, and I want to make sure we're tying in the proper description, otherwise I think we're going to have some problem. When you, the amendment says to a distance of 666 feet from the center line of Clay Street, it doesn't say which direction we're going. I think what you mean is to a distance of 666 feet and insert north from the center line of Clay Street. Would that be accurate?
Mr. Chair and Representative Ackerman, that would be correct. I did have Legislative Council whip these together pretty quickly, and so it's very possible with that. But yes, it would be, and it does reference north of Clay Street earlier in that line on line three. It says, or partially within the area directly to the north of Clay Street. But yes, it would be the 660 feet from the center line would go north, and if that needs to be placed in there, Mr. Chair, maybe we could entertain a conceptual amendment or something.
The committee administrator is checking with legal counsel now to see if that's permissible.
Okay.
In this occasion.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Really covers it.
Seeing no other questions, Doug Riggs. Jerry, can you stick around for a second?
Yes, I can. I'd be glad to stick around. And
Mr.
Riggs does not agree with me, then I can reach over and slightly convince him.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to be here this morning. For the record, I'm Doug Riggs. Just so you all know, I've had a number of conversations with Representative Premal on this bill, and actually worked with he and his staff for this map that you're looking at in front of you. Let me just give you a little bit of background. I hope I'm not reinventing the wheel or repeating myself here, but for those of you who don't know, we just expanded UGB by over 18,000 acres in December, close to 16,000 acres for residential properties and over 2,000 acres for industrial properties. We hope to bring in an additional 2,000 acres within the Metro UGB for industrial and commercial purposes by June of 2004. So as you can tell, this is a 20,000 acre expansion of the UGB in Portland. This was the result of extensive hearings, discussions, meetings, work groups, etc. We had several dozen public meetings. We had repeated correspondence with our local partners, including mayors of the various towns, etc. And this property did come up, as I told Chairman Crummel. In fact, we had direct communication on a variety of the Wilsonville sites. The original Metro recommendation in Wilsonville was modified heavily based on the input that we received from the city of Wilsonville, and we received direct communication apparently from a number of jurisdictions on this particular piece of property. I'm not the land use planner, but what I'm told is that this particular piece of property was not brought into the UGB for a number of reasons, and I'll just point out three of them. One of them was a concern by Tualatin that expansion would push the Wilsonville city limits too close to the Tualatin city limits, and there was a concern about the separation of communities goal that apparently that community has. The second was Wilsonville's indication that they are not prepared and will not be prepared to offer services to the property in any near-term frame of time. And the third was that in the long term, this particular piece of property may be right in the middle of a potential connector between Interstate 5 and Highway 99. And there was concern expressed by the city that locking this up or allowing for development on the piece of property, which might happen if you brought it into the UGB, could hinder efforts to have a connector between Highway 99 and Interstate 5. So those are a number of the reasons. I will point out that, again, this jurisdictional boundary issue and UGB expansion was the result of extensive public hearing and comment. And it certainly is the case that you're going to have winners and losers, and people are going to be happy and unhappy by the decisions. These are not easy decisions. Chairman Crummel is a mayor. I'm sure he heard from a number of his constituents who were unhappy with decisions that the city had made. But Metro, as you know, has been criticized extensively in the past, even here in Salem, for being unwilling to listen to the concerns of our local jurisdictions. And the council made a particular effort in the last round of hearings to go out and solicit input from the cities. And one of the reasons that this was not brought in was because of the input that we received from local cities in the area. The final point I'd make is that there are going to be disputes and differences of opinion on where UGBs ought to be expanded in every single city and county across the state. And I do worry a little bit that we're setting a difficult precedent here if we begin to ask the committees in Salem to address individual landowners, individual pieces of property at some point. Having said that, I would also encourage you to solicit views of the local cities. Tualatin and Wilsonville, I think, would be willing to come in and testify. In fact, I'm surprised they're not here today. But for these reasons, we oppose the bill. I gave fair warning of that to Chair Kremel, and he knows about that. So appreciate your opportunity to be here today.
Are there any questions of either Mr. Riggs or Mr. Kremel? Okay, thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The committee will stand at ease.
Can the legal counsel say we can make that?
That's what we're waiting on.
Oh, okay.
Go back in on our public hearing on 3084.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I spoke to Chris Green, who was a drafter of this amendment, and asked him about the conceptual amendment, and he said that's fine with him. So the way the amendment will read, that is right now conceptual, will come out with a dash number, will be in line 7 of the printed bill after boundary, delete the rest of the line and delete line 8 and inserts. All of those lots and parcels located entirely or partially within the area directly to the north of Clay Street, west of Graham's Ferry Road in Washington County, to a distance of 660 feet north from the center line of Clay Street. And if all parties are in agreement with that, that is the conceptual amendment that I will provide legislative counsel, who has informed me they'll have it out very quickly in time to drop the bill.
What is very quickly?
Within 24 hours, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative, what's your desire here?
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, Jerry Kremel, State Representative to House District 26 again. And the amendment is fine to make sure that that's specified in there, that it is to go to a distance of 660 feet north of the center of Clay Street is fine. And that will ensure then that it encompasses all of those properties, including the properties at the east end of Clay Street that are affected by the development. So I'll stop there unless there's anything else you'd like me to address, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondered, Representative Kremel, if you wanted to address the comments that the two cities affected by this had objections to inclusion.
Certainly. Mr. Chair and Representative Rosenbaum, thank you for the question. I think a couple of things. One is with regards to the separation of cities in the metro area. That is pretty much, at this point, a red herring. The reason why I say that is because as the metro area continues to grow, the cities in the metro area are going to continue to grow together, and as more people come into the area, and even with infill housing, which Portland is getting very good at, and some of the smaller communities around Portland are getting very good at as well, there's still going to be a need for increasing the and stretching the urban growth boundary. As that occurs, the cities of Tualatin and Wilsonville will grow closer together. I understand the goal of keeping them separated, and it's admirable, but I don't think it's realistic as we look out 20, 30, 50 years. The other issue with regards to development of a road through the area, I have worked for approximately 12 years on the issue of the West Side Bypass, and I'm very familiar with it. And the West Side Bypass would go off of I-5 towards Highway 99 in Sherwood, and then go north from there over to Highway 26. And while I recognize that that is the case, there's a couple of geological issues there. One being Morse Brothers, and the other issue is and how that road is actually would actually traverse. The other issue is with regards to the canyons that are in the area. So to say, you know, that we want to hold this land open for a road, that's fine. Then what we ought to do is lend some certainty to that and get the alignment of the road in place so that these property owners know that in fact their property is going to be acquired by the state of Oregon or by the Washington County or by the cities to be utilized as a West Side bypass. Otherwise, what we're doing is that we're holding these property owners basically in limbo, and I don't think it's fair to them to have their property value sitting in question when they sort of are stuck. I mean, they can't sell at this point. They can't refinance at this point. They can't change their use at this point. So, and quite frankly, it is being developed in that area as an industrial area. Now, the question becomes whether or not Wilsonville would become the jurisdiction or Tualatin would become the jurisdiction. And that you notice that's not in the bill. It's not saying that it would go into Wilsonville or Tualatin. I think probably it would go to whichever city decided it could be most useful to them. In terms of jurisdiction, I know that Wilsonville has stated that they don't have an interest in serving the area. And part of that, I would assert, is politically motivated. The mayor of Wilsonville flat out told me in conversations that while they had made the offer to work with the people on the north side of Clay Street and the people said that they didn't want to, now as they want to work with the city or work with the jurisdiction, the city of Wilsonville says no, that's we don't want to do that. I mean, it's not our job as government to punish these people because they wanted to fight the prison when the prison was being located there. So I think that for those reasons, going ahead and putting this into the urban growth boundary is something that can lend some assurance to these people that at some point in time they might be able to recapture some of their property values.
Close the public hearing.
Thank you.
On House Bill 3084, open a work session on House Bill 3084.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the conceptual amendment as stated by the committee staff. House Bill, what was it now? 3084.
Representative Ackerman?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Did you?
No, I was going to make the motion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh, it's made.
You got to memorize that.
Representative Zahner moves that we have a consensual amendment to House Bill 3084. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Excused.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
No.
Representative Richardson.
Excused.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Chair Berard.
Chair votes aye. Conceptual amendment. And Mr. Ackerman, Representative Ackerman, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, I move that House Bill 3084, as conceptually amended, be forwarded to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman moves House Bill 3084, as conceptually amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Excused.
Representative Greenland?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
No.
Representative Richardson.
Excused.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Chair Berard.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3084, as conceptually amended, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Crummell will carry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 3084. I thank the committee for their extended service this morning.
Move us to the floor.
And we'll move us to the floor with a due pass.
There you go.
This committee is adjourned.